it's exciting. As Australian cricketers, we always want to play against the best players in the world, and KG is the number one bowler in the world. So it's going to be another great challenge for all the batters and all of us, seeing we have to bat. But yeah, it's going to be another challenge. And the ICC has made their decision, and we respect them. That's their job. So we've got no dramas with it. As I said, I respect the ICC's decision. It's not here for me to sit here and say it's the right one or a wrong one. I respect it. Let's just move on and just go play some good cricket.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Cricket Unfiltered, the News Corp cricket podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel, a.k.a. Menners. And that was Nathan Lyon speaking after the decision was made to downgrade Kagiso Rabada's charge coming out of the second test, and therefore he's now available to play in the final two tests of this series. As usual, we've got a big show for you this week. Coming up, I've got the new Sydney Thunder coach, Shane Bond, and then Queensland and former Australian opening batsman, Joe Burns. But all the news is happening in South Africa, and I've got on the line from Cape Town, Ben Horn. Ben, how are you?
Hey, Menace. Yeah, it's all happening here, and quite a stunning result with Rabada being cleared. Can't believe it.
Yeah, I can't believe it. What does this mean, broadly speaking, for this whole demerit point system, and how did he get off?
He's got off because the New Zealand QC, Michael Herron, has accepted that it wasn't a deliberate shoulder bump. He's still been charged. He's been basically charged with a different offence to what he originally was. So he's found that it wasn't deliberate, and therefore he's thrown out that charge and instead given him one that's a grade one spirit of cricket type thing. So that's how he's got off. I suppose it is subjective as to whether it's deliberate, but I would argue that he deliberately put himself in a position where this was a pretty likely outcome of happening. And he's a repeat offender. I mean, he's got such a shocking record that as much as you want to see Rabada play, and this is a good result for the test match, I mean, it's really going to liven things up for day one here. But, yeah, in terms of what cricket stands for, I think it's dangerous areas because guess what? Cricket's not a contact sport.
Yeah, and I think as well it might open the floodgates for more of these appeals in the future with these, you know, when an IC, the match referee makes a decision, I think that more boards around the world are going to be happy to challenge them more, which is, I guess, not a great thing.
That's true. I mean, very rarely do players get off on appeal. It hasn't happened very many times, I don't think, since the Monkey Gates fiasco. But South Africa, I suppose, have shown a willingness time and time again to appeal, and you know, the squeaky wheel's got the oil. You know, they obviously mounted a compelling case. Their lawyer, who's a high profile figure over here in South Africa, Dali Mapofu, he was in the hearing for 6 hours yesterday. So I mean, I don't know how it went for that long, but you know, they've tried and tried, and you know, I suppose it's hard to knock South Africa. I mean, they're entitled to appeal if they want to, but I think the ICC have definitely put themselves in a tough position. And the person that you should feel for in this, I think, is Jeff Crow, the match referee, who's got a very good reputation. And they've essentially trampled all over it with this decision because they've basically said that his judgment on it was completely wrong.
Yeah, I'm stunned that it went this way. I just could not see it happening. And it's kind of left a nasty taste in my mouth the way it's all unfolded. I'll ask Faf for a mint next time I see him. But it does completely change the dynamic of the rest of the series now. I mean, you could argue that this makes South Africa favourites.
Well, definitely. I mean, it is 1-1, and Rabada was there in the first test, and Australia won. So, but I think just the momentum that South Africa will gain from this is quite immense. And he was obviously excellent in the last test match, took 11 wickets. So it's not so much that they're, you know, they can't be defeated with him there. But if you had Rabada ruled out of that side with Mornay Morkel coming in, that's when it takes on a different dynamic. And, you know, I think Australia would have really fancied themselves against that attack. So, yeah, it's Australia can still win the series, but they're now going to have to do it against a side that has the best bowler in the world playing, and also, you know, a lot of momentum behind him.
How is it that, though, Rabada virtually admitted his guilt after the test match and then it was overturned? That's what I don't get it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's an intriguing part of it. South Africa almost seemed to be resigned to losing the case as well, and seemingly doing it out of principle. So that part of it's baffling as well. But yeah, I mean, it's a stunning decision, and it'll be interesting to see, as you say, what impact this has on the ICC's credibility as time goes on.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about before the series that, you know, it's always eventful between Australia and South Africa, but could you have imagined what's transpired in the last couple of weeks from the stairwell incident to this to, you know, all building into the third test? I mean, you could not get more dramatic.
No. The test series in India last year is pretty dramatic, but I think this one's probably eclipsed it now. It is incredible. Let's hope that it gets the finish that it deserves, because despite having two good test matches so far, there hasn't really been much attention on the cricket. It's all been elsewhere. So it's been an amazing series, but, you know, let's hope it's remembered for ultimately what happens on the field, because we have the potential for a really epic finish to this series.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the Cape Town test in 1 minute, but just the last thing, how is it that Philander gets off scot-free for that tweet that he put out? Because I thought the ICC had clear rules on that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, he's argued that he didn't tweet it, so I guess that's the obvious thing. They would have to launch an investigation as to determine whether he did. Look, I mean, it was a ridiculous thing to tweet if he did tweet it, but I tend to sort of lean on the point of view that it's just embarrassing for him more than anything. I don't see that he needed to be charged for that, but he's probably made himself look like a bit of a goose.
Yeah, maybe just a rap on the knuckles. But to go after an international captain like that on a social media forum, I don't know. I don't know how he's managed to get through that, because I think some people would get pulled up for that. But we'll see. Drama. Let's talk about the cricket. 4 years ago, Australia won an epic test at Cape Town. David Warner scored twin tons. Michael Clark made a memorable century. Number three for Australia was Alex Doolan, who'll be playing in the Shield final. And the bowling attack for Australia was Harris, Johnson and Pattinson. So 4 years later, can the Aussies win again?
It'll be fascinating. I mean, it's been a kind of unnerving gap between the test years. So it could have one or two effects on the Australian team, I reckon. They might come out really refreshed. It's been a long summer, and I guess they've now got a healthy rest under their belt. But also, you wonder whether it's too much time off, and you know, how do they get that intensity up again? So it'll be interesting. Their batting needs to improve. That's essentially the bottom line, as it usually is with this Australian team. Bowling wise, they're in good shape, but they need someone in the top six to step up and make 100. Hasn't happened in this series, and they won't win if they can't get a batsman making a big 100 in the first innings.
Yeah, I know Mitchell Starc is under a bit of a fitness cloud. Have you got any word on that?
We're watching him bowl at the moment, actually, as we speak. He's out there.
Can you ask him?
In the middle having a bowl. So
to shout out.
I can't yell out to him, but okay. I can tell you that he looks in good nick. So look, I don't think there's any doubt about him for this test, but I suppose it's a concern with two test matches to go. If he's feeling sore after so much rest since the second test, that there may be some issues with him getting through both matches. But at this point, I'd expect Australia will be taking the field as per program. Mitch Marsh has bowled well today as well, so I think you can pencil the all-rounder into play too.
Good. You know, when I think about Mitchell Starc, I don't think he's a great bowler when he's at, say, 90% fitness, or pick, you know, when he's not quite at 100%, I don't think he can pull it off as well as, you know, other bowlers I've seen in the past, like McGrath. Well, that's a bad example, but other bowlers who can get by with a slight injury, Starc seems to need to be at his sharpest to really succeed. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. It's hard to know to what extent he is actually injured. I mean, it was really just yesterday he didn't bowl. You know, it may have been like merely a precaution that because he hadn't really trained for 4 days straight, they didn't want to kind of rush him back in if there was, you know, if he had any kind of discomfort. So, look, I'm not sure of the scale that he's actually being disadvantaged. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, he was the difference in the first test. He was the man of the match there. So you know, I think he can play a pretty key role. This might be more Josh Hazlewood's deck, though. It's a place that Bernard Philander's done extremely well at over his career, exploiting the grass and seaming the ball around. So I think those kind of conditions lend themselves to what Hazlewood can bring.
Excellent. And what I mean with Stark was he's kind of an all-or-nothing guy. When he's really on, he's just deadly. But when he's a little bit of an injury or not quite there, he can struggle. But anyway, let's move on. How is Nathan Lyon looking? I mean, will this pitch sort of break up and turn towards the end? And would Lyon come into it then, or is it a bit too early to tell?
Possibly a bit too early, but I think spinners do play a role here usually. I mean, there's been teams that play two spinners here at Newland, so I think he probably will come into this match later on. It'll keep pretty low and slow, I think. So I think Lyon will be key here, and I haven't done the exact maths on it, but he's pretty close to 300 Test wickets, so it could be a real big match for him. He's played in two very memorable matches in Cape Town already. He was part of the 47 all out one in 2011, and then 2014 when Australia won in with about two overs left in the match to win the series. So it's a pretty famous place, good and bad, for Australian cricket. So, you know, hopefully this match has the makings of another classic.
Yeah, I know Cameron at Bancroft spoke yesterday. I guess, what did he have to say? And, you know, I guess questions about his form were asked. How did he respond?
I guess, the focus was a bit more probably on Rabada and Philander, which we touched on earlier. Look, he's in an interesting position, I think, Bancroft. I mean, he took a bit of pressure off himself in the first test when he made that half century in the second innings. I mean, that showed a bit of gumption, but I still think he's got a lot to prove. And if he doesn't make a real significant impact in these last two tests, then I think, his position's in serious jeopardy, because you've got these blokes like Renshaw who are fired. So, yeah, look, I think this is an enormous challenge for Bancroft. He's really got to show that he's up to it. There's concerns about his technique. There's no question that he's a hard, diligent worker and he fits the environment very well. But he's got to deliver with some runs. It doesn't matter how you get them. You know, technique only matters if you're not making runs. But he needs 100, I think.
Yeah, and what about the South African team now with Rabada available? He'll play. Were they looking at making any changes apart from perhaps that force change that they won't have to make?
I think if Rabada was ruled out, they would have seriously considered two changes. Obviously, Morkel for him, and then I think it would have forced them to perhaps bring in an all-rounder who was more of a bowler. Chris Morris got added to the squad. But with Rabada now, I don't think they'll probably need to do that. I'd expect it would be between Tennis, De Bruyne, who's already there, and probably Temba Bavuma. If he can prove his fitness, I think he would come into serious consideration at six. It'll come down, though, to whether Bavuma is fit, because he hasn't been for the previous couple of games. But they like his batting, and if he can prove his fitness, then he'd be a serious chance, I think.
Yeah, Bavuma was quite handy when South Africa came out here last tour. I think he pulled off some miracle run out at the Wacker, changed the game. So that'll strengthen them.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal fielder.
He's about our height, Ben. We could probably look him in the eye.
Yeah, exactly. I think I might be taller than him, which I can't say very often. But he's a good player. De Bruyne, I think hasn't really added anything at six. So, you know, Bavuma's made a couple of test hundreds, I think, and he's quite a tough player. So I think they'd be tempted to back themselves with just four bowlers.
Now, how's the body odour amongst the press corps with the water restrictions in Cape Town? But more seriously, you know, what's it like being in a city that's in the grips of a major crisis?
It's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure how I'd describe it, really. I mean, there's signs everywhere in your hotel room, at the hotels in particular, in public restrooms like at the airport and places like that. You can't actually turn the taps on. They've just got hand sanitizer, so it's very noticeable. I mean, you can't miss the fact that this is going on. But in terms of the overall mood of the city, I'm in a hotel, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask. But it hasn't sort of been perhaps that real noticeable desperation that I was anticipating might be the case. So I think things are on a knife's edge here. That they've put the day zero sort of doomsday predictions back. a month or two, so there is a bit more breathing space. So, look, speaking to local people here, the good news is that it seems to have brought people together rather than, you know, causing fights on the street and things like that, which people were fearing might happen. It seems like it's had a unifying effect and, you know, they just need some rain.
Yeah, let's fingers crossed for that one. So I guess broadly speaking, I'm expecting an absolute humdinger on when the third test begins. What are you expecting?
Well, there's no reason to think anything else. I mean, one thing I think is for certain is if we get 5 days of sunshine, we're going to see a result. The two bowling attacks are too good to play out a draw, I think. Bowling is just the dominant force in this series by a mile. So I think it'll be a great end to the series because they'll both be result test matches. Both teams need to find a bit more with the bat. I mean, South Africa's got De Villiers, who's in right form, and Australia need one of their big guns, Smith or Warner, to match what De Villiers is doing.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for your time. Hopefully we can catch up after the test sometime.
Thanks, man. It's a cheers, mate.
Excellent stuff as always there from Ben Horn, who is in Cape Town. Now, if you want to keep up with all the action from the South African-Australia Test Series, you can go to all the News Corp mastheads for up-to-date information. The dailytelegraph.com.au/cricket, Courier Mail, Herald Sun, Perth Now or Adelaide Now. All of Ben Horn's stuff will be there when you get up in the morning and you want to catch up on the action. And Pete Lawler is over there for the Australian reporting, and you can catch all his stuff on the Australian website and the paper. All right, coming up after the break, we have the new Sydney Thunder head coach, Shane Bond. He's a former New Zealand fast bowler. And to give you an idea of just how good he was when he played Test cricket, he took 87 wickets in 18 Test matches at the phenomenal strike rate of 38.7 balls per wicket. That is the best record of any modern bowler. The best strike rate, better than Rabada, better than anybody who's played in the last 100 years. So coming up after the break is the new Sydney Thunder coach, Shane Bond.
Got it! Hat-trick, throw a ball, beautifully bowled. Well done, Shane Bond. Good comeback, Bracken's gone, and it's another wicket down. All the New Zealanders, well done.
Joining me now on the Cricket Unfiltered podcast is the man with the third best strike rate in the history of Test cricket, but the new Sydney Thunder head coach. Congratulations on the job, Shane, and welcome to Sydney. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm really excited, mate. I'm obviously very proud to get the job. Really looking forward to being involved with the team and hopefully coincide with not only success, but the fans really enjoying the sort of cricket that we play.
Yeah, now you're assistant coach up at the Brisbane Heat. What have you learnt from Brendan McCullum and Dan Vettori, and what do you want to bring to the Thunder?
Oh, I think what it does do, having been assistant coach in a whole number of different roles, really is give you clarity about the things you believe in and the way that you want to bring a culture and a team together. And I think I'm really clear about that. I think the challenge is, or what I'm really looking forward to, is getting a really good team behind me, because it's not a role you can do on your own. We know we've got some very good players, and if we get everything in place that I think we can, then I think we can have a very successful and enjoyable coming few years.
Yeah, and what sort of things go into making up the culture in a Big Bash team or any sort of T20 franchise when players sort of come in for a short period?
Oh, the players first and foremost. I mean, the game's based around the players. So getting a playing group of good people first and foremost, and you need some ability as well. And you need those guys to have a willingness to want to get better. And I think that's a big part of what I want to bring to the table, is I want players who want to get better and improve. And I think if we get that we go a long way to being successful. And I think it's just being planning and organising behind the scenes and making sure that we cover off everything and control everything that we possibly can. On top of that, you need a little bit of luck, don't you? So you need a little bit of luck, you need, you know, things to go your way, you need players to stay fit, and you need a player or two in your team to get hot when the season starts. So there's a little bit out of your control, but I'm pretty confident I can take care of the rest with the team we've got around me.
Excellent. And how involved do you want to be in putting together the squad for next season?
Oh, there's you're inheriting a squad. You always do when you come into a role like this. I think for me is wanting to put a team together firstly next year that can be very competitive, and then also thinking long term, what does the Thunder look like in 3 years' time? So we know we've got the nucleus of a very good team. I think team won 4 games out of 10 last year. It's extended season, so the challenge for all squads to add a little bit of depth to that, given the higher nature. And often the challenge now with overseas players of having availability for the whole time is going to be tough. So, look, there's some people who we're looking at getting, and if we can recontract some guys who are off contract, then we can put together a competitive team.
Thanks for your time and good luck.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
In a moment, we're going to get to Joe Burns, who reveals a unique interest outside cricket. But before we do that, I just want to remind all the listeners out there that if you've got a moment, can you please subscribe to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast if you haven't already done so? Can you please rate and review the show on whatever app you listen to the show on? You can find me on Twitter at Amenners, AmenNERS. You can find my weekly cricket column at news.com.au/cricket or dailytelegraph.com.au/cricket. And we'll be back in a moment with Joe Burns.
Joe Burns just keep playing the way he's been playing. Each ball.
It goes. He did go for it. It's gone all the way, has it? Yes, it has. What a magic moment for Joe Burns. Australia have found another hero at the top of the order.
You're listening to Cricket Unfiltered, the News Corp cricket podcast, and joining me now is Joe Burns, who is about to play in the Sheffield Shield final for Queensland. You must be pretty pumped to be in the Shield final, Joe.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Obviously, you don't get a chance to play in the final every week, so very excited for the week preparation going into the game and just getting out there and getting stuck in. It's been a few years now since Queensland played in the Shield final. So all the boys, I think it's a new experience for most of them. So exciting times up in Brisbane.
You played in, I think, 2 Shield finals before, is that right? Do you draw on that sort of experience going into a big game like this?
Yeah, I've played in 2. Obviously, though, a fair time ago now. Probably fall back more on my test experience more than anything, given that the fact that the game is 5 days and a little bit more pressure than a normal Shield game. You speak to a lot of the older guys who have played in the Shield finals and they compare it to test cricket. So I'll be trying to use all my test experience and trying to pass on as much advice to the boys as possible over the next few days in preparation.
You've been in cracking form with the bat this summer. Despite an injury, you've made 635 runs at just under 60. Are you feeling in pretty good nick?
Yeah, feeling good. Obviously, with the injury, I had a fair time out of the game, about 2 months out, really. So still feeling like I'm, finding my feet a bit again at the crease. So just trying to get as much volume as possible now. The boys are probably trying to freshen up in this week, getting ready for the final, whereas I'm still in that phase of just trying to get back into it. But had a good hit out last week in Wollongong and felt good. Didn't feel like the form had gone anywhere, so hopefully I can hang on to that for one more week.
Yeah, is it just kind of a rhythm thing when you sort of get an injury midway through a season, sort of just knocks your sort of flow out a little bit?
Yeah, I think it can do, simply because you just spend so much time out of the game. But in saying that, there can be some pluses to it. Mentally, it really does freshen you up and focus your mind and get you, really excited to get back out there. So whereas the other boys are probably finding rounds 8, 9, 10, a bit of a grind, you're probably at your freshest throughout the entire season at the back end, which is a nice feeling. But I think it just takes some time in the middle for it to feel normal again. With any batting, just time at the crease, it'll all come back. And I was fortunate enough to make 97 in my first innings back. So after about the first 20 runs, it started to feel just like at home again. So hopefully like I said, that form can carry on for one more week.
You mentioned your test experience. You played 13 tests for Australia so far. You opened the batting with Davey Warner for a while there, and you were given the nickname The Odd Couple. Why were you given that name?
I'm not sure. I think we're two guys that, we go along quite well. I guess it surprised me that I got on with Davey as well as I did, and probably surprised him that he got along with me as well as we did. And I'm not sure. We just enjoy each other's company. We spend a lot of time on and off the field together. So, yeah, I'm not sure where that's come from.
Yeah, I saw a bit of back and forth on social media. You were sledging him, he was sledging you back. But you had a real, you had a really successful period there. You put on 4-century stands. What is it about you two together that made you a successful opening partnership?
Well, I think first of all we just clicked off the field, and then on the field I think our games complemented each other quite well. But in saying that, when you're batting with a world-class batter like Davey, it's very easy to bat with guys like that. He certainly just dominates the attack and takes it to him. And I guess with someone with the amount of experience he's got, he's great to learn the game off as well, whether it's out in the field or talking to him off the field. So, I mean, when I was opening with Davey, I was just trying to absorb as much information as possible and try and add as best I could to the performance of the partnership.
Yeah, does he get fired up out there when you were batting with him?
I wouldn't say fired up. He gets very focused on the task at hand, which is great to bat with someone like that. He keeps reminding you of what we're trying to do together. He reminds you of what's important, and he just has a really strong mind, really, like I said, focuses on the task that's required of the two of us out there at that time.
Now, I want to ask you a bit about your focus. I saw on Instagram that you write different names on the top of your bat handle. So I think I saw Cans and Reggie and Dominique, yeah. Maybe. What do those names mean?
Well, I go batch of bats. Obviously, Brendan McCullum writes horse names on the bat, on the shoulders of his bats. But, yeah, so that's my immediate family and where they come from. So it's just a gentle reminder every time you look down to see, you know, the people and the places that are important to you in your life, and just to provide that little extra motivation.
And I guess sort of where did you grow up, and who are some of the people that are really important to your career?
Well, obviously my family, and then Cairns comes from the fact that my dad's from far north Queensland. His family's all from Cairns. And then growing up, my mum grew up, she comes from Coolum, Italy originally, but then I lived at Coolum for a bit. So, I mean, it's just the places and the people along the way that I guess, you know, are important to you, to get you to that point in time.
And does seeing those words on your back kind of just snap you, your focus or something?
I mean, more than anything, it's used to kind of tell which bat's which when they're just kind of
that makes sense. That makes sense.
Rather than putting numbers or symbols or whatever on them. But, yeah, I mean, it is something that, you know, if you're seeing it non-strikers, then I know early in the season, we're actually up in Cairns, and I had a focus of wanting the bat really well and really long and making a big score because it was where my dad's family comes from, and having family in the crowd watching, knowing how much it meant to them that the game is in Cairns, given that they grew up there. It's kind of a lesson to show how strong your mind can be when you have something that's, you know, motivating you and pushing you, and there's nothing better to motivate you than those important to you and, you know, the places that you come from.
Yeah, definitely. Talking about other things that motivate you, when Jim Maxwell tweeted out that your bowling in the BBL was a bit of backyard cricket, I saw you had a very light-hearted reaction on Twitter, and I think you saw the funny side of it. But how do you react to, you know, cricket commentators and cricket writers, the stuff they say?
Look, I don't mind. I enjoy the cricket commentators. I do enjoy the banter of cricket, and I also understand that the cricket commentators have a job to do. So I've always, you know, even when I was playing for Australia, I always enjoyed talking to the guys off field and talking to them, you know, away from the professional world as well, and getting to know them. We always talk about how much the players travel and amount of time away from home, but those guys do the exact same thing without, I guess, as much of the glamorous side. So it's always a fond respect for all the commentators and the cricket writers, and yeah, there's a bit of a joking around with Jim. I'm glad he took it the right way, because when I wrote it, I was a bit worried he might take it as a serious kind of barb at him, but I'm glad he saw the funny side.
You're sticking an emoji on the end of everything, softens it up. Do you read stuff about yourself online, or do you stay away from that?
I try and try and avoid the stuff that says I'm crap. I don't see any point in reading the stuff that tries to tell you how bad a cricketer you are. But look, it's always nice if you see some good stuff written about you. But like I said, you try and avoid it. If it's not so positive, it doesn't really make sense to just read the negative stuff.
Yeah, I was doing some research actually for this interview, and I didn't see too much negative stuff online about you, if any, none recently. So you'll be right at the moment if you Google your own name.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about Queensland. You've come out after the break and won four of your last five games, stormed into the final. What's gone well for the team since the BBL break?
I think a couple of things. I think we've been really consistent with the teams that we've been able to put out in the park, which means that, you know, when you have consistent selections and consistent players on the field, you'd like to think that the performances become more consistent from there, and that's certainly something that we've seen in the back half of the year. I think we're preparing really well. Guys are training really specifically for game to game, what's required, and I guess not only the performance side of that, but to, you know, the experience that you gain from week in, week out, talking about how you need to make subtle adjustments to your game to get the maximum performance. It's fantastic for a young team. I think most importantly, we've got an attack that is bowling the house and consistently taking 20 wickets, which you need to do in four-day cricket, obviously, but it seriously impacts the way that you play the game as a whole. And it certainly helps the batters out knowing that you've got a bowling attack that, regardless of the situation, the runs on the board is capable of taking 20 wickets and winning you the game. It certainly does take the pressure off the batting to an extent. Obviously, the batters still have a job to do, but I think, you know, you look at any great team anywhere, they've always had a fantastic bowling attack. There's not too many teams that rely solely on their batting and their fielding. So we're really blessed at Queensland that we've had some great bowlers who have stayed on the park all season.
Yeah, so I guess Michael Nisa would be one of those bowlers. He's taken, well, almost 40 wickets at about 20. Is he someone that really gets to that Duke's ball moving around?
Yeah, he does. I mean, he can swing any ball, but in particular the Duke's. I think the Duke just allows him to swing it for longer. So he's a very skilled bowler in that he can do it with any ball, but the characteristics of the Duke means that he's, you know, the swing bowling aspect of his bowling is more of a threat to longer throughout the innings, which is a huge asset to him. He's a fantastic player. And so I think he's, you know, people are seeing the best of him over the last year or two. And he's someone that, you know, we'll turn to heavily in the final for that impact with the ball.
Yeah, and do you enjoy batting against the Duke's ball? Do you feel it improves your game, that sort of extra test?
Yeah, I certainly do. I think it's a fantastic ball. I think I said right from the beginning that it lends itself to better cricket in that if you're a good batter, you'll make runs. If you're a good bowler, you'll take wickets. And if you're a good spinner, you'll find a way to have success as well. The fact that it stays harder for longer, not only the fact that it swings, means that you know, the swing helps the bowlers, but the hardness of the ball helps the batters. So if you have a technique that can deal with the swing, you'll reap the rewards. But in saying that, if you're a little bit lapsed in one area of your game, it'll find you out a little bit quicker. And I like that. I think there's a lot of times in first-class cricket, especially in more so in the southern states with the cooker ball, where once it stops swinging, basically overs 10 to 80 can be very mundane. There's a lot of, I guess, easier runs on offer. So I guess from a batting perspective, I like the fact that guys are always having to work hard to get their runs. And from a fielding and bowling point of view, you're always a chance of getting a wicket if you put the ball in decent areas. Whereas with the cooker, sometimes you can be putting the ball in decent areas for long periods of time, but you just don't get any assistance at all. So I think it, you know, all that combined means it's better cricket. It's more entertaining for the spectator. It's more enjoyable for the players. And it's a better reflection of performance. Guys who play well will stand up in their, you know, their performances will show that.
And do you think it's preparing players better for the step up to Test cricket?
Yeah, I think it certainly does. The thing that Test cricket has is that, generally speaking, you have a relentless bowling attack coming at you. There's no easy runs in Test cricket. So I guess from that aspect, the fact that you've got a ball in first-class cricket that will continually do something means that the bowlers are always a threat. And that's what it takes at Test cricket. It's, you know, that it's every single ball of every over that you need to work your ass off. And like I said, there's, you know, sometimes in first-class cricket, between overs 10 and 80, it can become quite mundane, whereas even if that happens in Test cricket, you do have world-class bowlers kind of bowling at you. So it's better, in my opinion, it does better prepare you for the step up to Test cricket. And also the adjusting your game to different conditions around the world. If you go somewhere where it swings more, for example, in England or South Africa or places like that, you know, you're better prepared for the situations you're going to find yourself in.
Ed Cowan said when he retired that he felt he got better after his experience at Test cricket. Do you feel that you've got better since you've had that experience?
I think it'd be silly. Well, like it's hard not to put it that way. I think once you, the more you play, the more experience you pick up along the way, and there's no better experience than playing Test cricket for Australia. And you use all your experiences to continually develop your game and become a better cricketer week in, week out. So, like I said, it's, you know, the experience of playing Test cricket is something that you fall back on hugely for this week in a Shield final. But, you know, there's situations all throughout the season that the pressure and the situations that you find yourself in Test cricket are invaluable for what you're facing in other aspects of your career. I think that's transferable across forms as well. You look at the Big Bash, having the experience of playing in front of big crowds on big stage under pressure leaves you with a more level head and more focused mind into what's important at that point in time and just how to deal with all those different kind of little situations.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you about a couple of players in your team that maybe, you know, listeners don't know that about but have had great seasons. So Manus Lobashane, is that how to pronounce it?
No one knows how to pronounce his name, but Lobashane, I think.
So he's had a very consistent season. He's only a young man. Is he someone that you think's really sort of maturing as a cricketer?
Yeah, I think it always takes time to find your feet. Manus has always looked the part for me. He's always, I think you can tell fairly quickly if someone's up to the, you know, the requirements of first-class cricket from a technique point of view. And right from the first day he was involved, I always thought that he had what it takes. And I think just with that little bit of experience now, he's really putting it all together, and we're seeing the signs of that with his performances. He's had a great season. I think he's our team's leading run scorer. And for a young person to be doing that, it's a great reward. I think a lot of people make the comment about how guys are only averaging 40 and whatnot these days, but you got to remember that guys are also facing pink ball, juke ball, a lot of different grounds, a lot of different situations that for a young guy to come in and be able to adjust his game like that is a testament to him. And that's the biggest challenge for the young guys, having to, I guess, continually adapt. I remember when I first started, there was 10 cookerball games in, and I think 5 of them were at the Gabba, so it was a lot easier to be consistent because it was a more consistent kind of world that we're playing in. Mm. So any young guy that can come in and do it now, it's a great achievement.
How's Matty Renshaw going after he copped that knock?
The concussion?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's. I think he's all good. I think he'll have some tests. We haven't seen each other since we've gotten back from Sydney, but I think he'll have some tests this week. But I imagine that he'll be right to play. I think by the end of the game, he was pretty much there. But yeah, I imagine that the medical staff will just run a check over it over the coming days.
Did you have a bit of a laugh when he picked up the keeping gloves and took a return from the outfield and your team got penalised 5 runs? Have you given him a rule book to study?
Well, I think we've all been given a rule book.
Really?
So there's been a few times this year our team's copped a 5-run penalty. So
what other times?
We had a fake throw incident earlier in the year. And then I think the ball's hit the helmet as well. So our goal has been to give up no more 5-run penalties. So hopefully we can get through this final with any penalised runs.
Excellent. Well, Joe, thank you so much for your time. Before I let you go, I just want to ask you, what are some of your interests away from cricket?
Some of my interests away from cricket?
Yeah, you know, what's it something the listeners, you know, want to know about Joe Burns? What do you do? Do you watch TV? Are you a video game player?
Well, yeah, I'm actually starting a surf clothing label. So it's been occupying a bit of my time, especially while I was injured. Something I would look to kind of amp up during the off season. So things like that, I guess, excite me and just keep me occupied.
So like an entrepreneur type?
Yeah, so it's basically just like a clothing company where you just do some cool prints and whatnot and just meet some cool people along the way. So it's been exciting and good fun. Other than that, I think the modern cricketer is pretty time poor, to be honest. The amount of cricket that we play in our schedules, you don't always get a chance to have too many interests outside the game. But little things like that, just You know, if you have a rough day at cricket, you can just switch off and think about something else. And it's always a nice thing to have ticking away in the background.
Will you have a go at some of the designs or?
Yeah, so me and a friend of mine are basically doing it from scratch. So we'll design the shirts and just finding ways to market it and all that jazz. It's always, I think it's a good learning curve, but just exciting, like I said, to meet all the different people along the way that are in that industry.
Do your label have a name yet so we can keep an eye out for it?
No, well, we've got some ideas, but probably not to the point where I can really
reveal anything.
Yet, so.
We'll wait. We'll keep an eye out for it on your social media.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
I'll be pushing it on social media anyway, so I'm sure once I can, they'll get the name out there.
Well, I have to say, when I asked you about your interests, I didn't expect fashion design to be the thing that came back. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird, but
no, it's good.
Like I said, I think it's more so just the industry of meeting people, and anytime you do something new, it's always a great learning curve. Anything for that matter in life, but you know, you just find out new things every day. So it's always exciting.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy preparing for the Shield final. Best of luck to you and the Queensland team, and hopefully we can catch up in the future.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Anytime.
Cheers. That's it for the podcast this week. Thanks again for listening and downloading the show. We'll be back next week with a full wrap of the third test in Cape Town. Remember, keep up with it at dailytelegraph.com.au/cricket, and we'll be back next week with another podcast.